Cries of the World by Susan Murphy. We have to discover what unremitting and repeated practice might be, and then the chance of no one left to hear becomes distinctly possible. It's also what you do next. When the mind suddenly opens, the cries of the world grow no less acute. As Kuan Yin, goddess of mercy, who hears all the cries of the world with no picking and choosing, no barrier in her heart. So when the mind suddenly opens, the cries of the world grow no less acute. Ask Guan Yin, goddess of mercy, who hears all the cries of the world with no picking and choosing, no barriers in her heart. I thought this evening I would offer a little talk about something called the Four Immeasurable Minds. And they are variously translated or interpreted, most commonly as equanimity or acceptance, loving compassion, loving kindness, and joy. I have found for me in my practice that there's a possibility of a certain order in practicing these, I'll call them orientations, that can be really valuable. And I just want to offer it to you as a possibility. So these four immeasurable minds are pointers to the Buddha nature that is already present in us. So it's not something that we need to create. I think sometimes we hear about, the different paramitas or emptiness in form, and we think we need to make it somehow. These are things that we just see, we embody, we can set our intention. And I think setting our intention helps us embody these aspects of ourselves, helps us recognize these aspects of ourselves. So, you know, one of the places that we begin in our practice, if we think about Buddha's story, is just in recognizing suffering. We recognize suffering in ourselves. We recognize suffering in the world. The longer we practice, perhaps the more we realize that these are not separate at all. We think of suffering as being our own so often, create a sense of identity out of it, or somehow feel like we possess our suffering and it is deeply separate from the suffering of other beings. Those of us who have perhaps sat in a zendo during a sesshin, perhaps someone makes a comment in a Dharma talk and you were feeling nice and happy and they make a comment and they start to cry and suddenly you find that you're crying with them. This can happen without words, too. We really are very sensitive instruments. And I think that sometimes there are emotional fields that just pass through us. We all partake in that. And of course, this happens worldwide. We can find that the entire world sometimes seems angry, cold, judgmental, hard. So we can notice these kinds of things, right? They pass. They're these mind states that arise and take hold of even entire populations. We really are not separate, and we don't always know where these things arise from either. So sometimes, you know, we may be feeling in a particular way and we can tell a very personal story about it. You know, maybe it's a sadness that comes up for us and we think, oh, this is because of something that happened in my past. I got to figure out what it is. Well, that may be true, but it also may not be true. It may be just that you are a sensitive instrument. You're picking up on something that is passing through. But the first thing we might do is we might begin just by noticing what is here, what is present for us. And, you know, many people come to practice because they are feeling some kind of pain or suffering or even just dis-ease. And, you know, often our orientation when we begin practicing is that we're just going to skip over that stuff and get to the good stuff. But what we find as we sit is that we just, you know, the peace actually doesn't come from forcing stuff away and, you know, through spiritual bypass or, you know, escapism. It seems to come by just letting things be, kind of ironically, you know. And that's a big part of what sitting encourages us to do. We might say, well, how? How do we do this? How do we practice this letting be? Just by doing what we're doing now. Just by sitting still and noticing what's present. And it may help to have a little bit of a thought arise, an orientation that leads us toward this kind of acceptance, this equanimity. Perhaps for you, for me, it's a question. I don't have to think, let it be. Usually when I get too instructive with myself, I can get tripped up in trying to make things a particular way. But if I just ask myself a question, you know, okay, what's here? What's here now? And if I'm really just honest about it, let it be here. It's already here, so why not let it be here? Why wrestle with it, fight with it? That just makes things worse. You know, we often say that which we run from controls us. And it's like, you know, it's like playing in the video arcade. You keep trying to bop down the, what's that, gopher or whatever that pops up from one hole to another, whack-a-mole. You know, you just keep whacking this hole and then the other one and it pops out somewhere else. Then you're driving in your car and you start screaming at someone and you don't know why. Just let it be. Just let it be. That's the softening. The softening aspect. That softening is what I call equanimity. It's like you're like a great, big, vast ocean, and you're just letting the rain fall when the rain falls, and you're letting the sun shine when the sun shines. It's that simple. We don't need to try to push away the clouds. We can't, you know? So just let the rain fall. And the wondrous thing here is that in practicing this acceptance, this equanimity, this letting be, we may find that we, you know, that old James Ford title, if you're lucky, your heart will break. We may find that we break open. We really just break open. And that our pain, you know, the whole catastrophe gets let in that way. And we may think that's a problem, but it's the hardest part is wrestling with reality, pretending things are not true, pretending we aren't disturbed, pretending we aren't sad, pretending we aren't upset when we are. That arm wrestling match we play with ourselves. Really, it's absurd. I mean, it's absurd. You're just upset, so just why not just be it, you know? It'll pass. And of course, that's part of what we realize as we sit. We sit with it, and the moment we let it in, it is no longer what it was. We find that it doesn't have the hard edges or the solidity that we imagined. It's so hard to describe, but I'm sure you've all experienced it at some point, that quality of just sitting, wrestling against reality, wrestling against what is, and then finally you just sit still and you let it be. Ah. Maybe some tears fall, and you're like, why was I fighting with this in the first place? This kind of ease that comes when we let it, just let it be. So this is the first immeasurable mind. We are letting the whole catastrophe be. As I've said, we can't really tell the source of these troubles often. You know, you may find that as you let it be, you realize that it was that your mind starts to tell you story after story, the many, many different causes that arise for you. Some of them perhaps personal, but then before you know it, you know, your mind is swinging off into other things, other stories, the suffering that you heard of in the world, people you care about, people you don't know who you know are suffering, you know, the future of the planet, the whole, the full thing just there with you. And you loving that world, you caring about that world, your heart filled with compassion for all the beings of the world who are just like you, who suffer just as you do. And without your even having to make it happen, you are Guanyin. You are filled with compassion for all those who may suffer just the way that you do. And the Dharma gate was you just letting yourself be exactly what you are in the first place. Letting go of compass points. Just what's here now? Who am I now? Am I sad? Am I angry? Am I brokenhearted? Am I joyful? What am I? Whatever I am, that is the Dharma gate. To a kind of resonance with all beings. Compassion. So the first immeasurable mind, upekkha, breaking open to karuna, compassion for ourselves and all beings who are in this boundless tangle of love and heartache together. And from that sense of care that just comes from with this open-heartedness, we may find ourselves feeling with all beings and wanting in some way to be of benefit, perhaps meeting one another with kindness. This next possibility, loving kindness, metta. You know, sometimes it may not even feel loving. It may just feel like an appropriate response. It may be feel like tough love even. It may feel like standing up for someone who you know is being hurt. But done with this place, from this place of care, from this place of sympathy, care, compassion. And you know, in our practice, something that we talk about is the way that the ends and the means are the same. How can we transform the world by reenacting the very same patterns that the world is enacting? If we imagine that we're going to murder the murderers, we find that we're participating in an endless cycle of violence. This is a spiritual practice for a reason. Perhaps we find the possibility of engaging with kindness, with care. You know, we hear these stories of people, I'm sure someone will be able to tell it more specifically. It's been a long time. It's just jumping into my mind now, and I can't remember the names of the folks. But you know, these people who move in next to their neo-Nazi neighbor and they learn about this, and you know, they are the very target of this person's hatred. But they end up getting into a relationship with this person, treating them with respect, despite, of course, their revulsion and fear. And how over time, that transforms the person who hated them. Oh, it's a challenging path, isn't it? Maybe it just feels impossible. We have our four vows, our impossible vows to save all beings. But as we let in the whole catastrophe, we do begin to see the way that we co-create each other. And in that, we can see the patterns, whatever patterns there may have been that have created these dramatic polarities, but we can also begin to see the healing possibilities in co-creating each other, the possibility of kindness, the possibility of love, of care, and how that might have possibility for transformation in the world. Fortunately, most of us, although some of us have to face that kind of thing, but most of the time we are not in that type of a context. Most of the time it's not quite so dramatic, and we're maybe in more the situation where we're meeting people who are frustrated or anxious or troubled or sad. And because we've been there ourselves, we can recognize it, we can resonate with it, and we know how far a little kindness goes in those moments. How much you have benefited at some point in your life when you were really struggling and someone met you with sweetness. And from this action, perhaps we begin to feel a little bit of joy. Joy in each other's joy. Joy in alleviating suffering. Joy in appreciating now that which used to feel like a threat, our inseparability. Where that had felt so threatening, we begin to appreciate love, our interwovenness, and all the possibilities that it brings. I'm sure you can think of a moment, a story in your life when someone was troubled and you met them with sweetness and you saw the ease that it brought in them and how joyful you felt in that moment, seeing that ease. It's not always possible, of course, but this is the promise of the four immeasurables. This possibility that through accepting what we are in a given moment, that our heart may break and break open. And in that opening, we feel compassion for ourselves and for all beings who suffer. And that compassion motivates us to take some kind action to alleviate that suffering. And in that action, our life is given meaning and we feel great joy. And how these four minds are really just you, just what you already are, when we let ourselves meet ourselves just as we are and manifest in the world. It takes great courage to turn toward what we are in the first place. For many people, this is the hardest part. We want to skip it. We want nothing to do with it. This is the bad stuff. The pain that I'm feeling, I don't want anything to do with it. So I'm just going to avoid it. I'm going to cultivate practices of escapism instead. But what our practice suggests is that when we meet ourselves just as we are, this much deeper transformation is possible that allows for us to enact our vow one moment, one person, one interaction at a time to save all beings. And in living that life, we can feel deeply appreciative of our interwovenness, how purposeful it is, how meaningful it is, the enormous possibility that's there, the enormous love at the heart of it. And perhaps we'll taste that enormous gratitude, that joy. For me, that word gratitude captures it even more. As Meister Eckhart wrote, if the only prayer you ever say in your life is thank you, it will be enough. Thank you.